difficult
women.
Hello.
Hi.
Whoa, I'm like ragamuffin-y over here.
Don't cry.
Hello.
You been smoking cigarettes in your basement again?
Yep, that's what I do now. Oh, God. I'm Katie.
I'm Marie, and this is the Difficult Women Podcast, coming to you from Nashville and Brooklyn.
Huzzah.
Huzzah.
I've been saying huzzah a lot lately. I don't know. I like it.
I do, too.
I don't know. I used to do this. You can't see it on the podcast, but I used to do this a lot, which is just sort of like where you kind of shake your fist on each side of your
ear. Have you been doing that a lot?
No, I used to do it a lot. I'm like, I think I need to bring this back. I don't talk to anybody, so it's just for me.
Cheerio, champ.
Oh, yeah, we did it.
We did it. Yeah, in a couple of years when we don't have to wear masks anymore, you can really hold your hands and cheer.
It is a good mask wearing movement because it demonstrates something without having to use your face.
Oh, that's nice.
You know,
instead of handshaking, you just shake your hands near your ears.
Yeah, it's just a celebration move.
I might need to post a picture of you doing this on our Instagram account just so people understand what the fuck we're talking about.
Hello.
Follow us on Instagram at Difficult Women Pod. I think that's it.
Join us for this miming pod where you just mime the whole episode and then you can guess.
I know you guys can't see it, but I'm stuck in a box.
We should have a miming podcast.
Oh my God.
Anyway, how's it going? I'm working on your mind.
I stayed up so late last night watching the Billie Eilish documentary and it made me.
I didn't even know there was one.
Oh my God. It just came out on Apple TV. Do you have Apple TV? I think I've asked you this.
There's too many things now. I don't know if I have Apple TV.
Well, I have some, like, I can give it away to people or something. I'll send it. But it will literally text you, like, will you join Marie's family? Like,
I sent
it to a guy I like, and because I was like, I have a free subscription, and I sent it to him, and then it was like, you're asking me to join your family? I was like, all right, I fucked it up already.
Why would they phrase it like that? I mean, I'm happy to join your family.
It's absolutely terrifying. Do not send it to a person you just started talking to. Yeah. We'll scare the shit out of them. Anyway, I'll send it to you because you are part of my family. We have a joint checking account. If you can't be on my Apple TV account, then I don't know what we have.
I can be responsible with your account.
Anyway, watch this documentary, you guys. I don't know if you like Billie Eilish or not. I fucking love her and her brother.
Yes.
But it's a 2.5-hour documentary. It's so well done and it makes me miss concerts.
Mm.
Like I was dancing in my apartment to her music and just like I just want to go. Like I went to raves in college. I might go to a rave just once the pandemic is over just to like feel the music in my body again.
You know, I wonder if like that'll be a side effect of the post-pandemic life that like, you know, because that's the thing where back in the day, in the before times, if you saw like old people at a rave, you'd be like, what's that about? I have a feeling that all sorts of types of people are going to be doing all sorts of types of things because they're going to be like, fuck this. You know, I'm not embarrassed about anything. I want to live my life.
Yeah.
Do the things.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the rave.
Yes. But just live music and dancing and the energy, like the with live concerts, like just how the music can affect your core. Mm-hmm. And like these teeny boppers were just sobbing at her concerts. And I was crying, too, here in my apartment just watching it. I just love music and I just miss it. There's nothing like live music. I think that may be what I miss the most. I miss performing live the most, and then I miss
attending.
Yeah, that's art, just art. I just miss it being a moment in time that is like that you experience.
Well, you know what that also makes me think about? It makes me think about how like people always say like, oh, you know, robots will replace everything. Robots will replace, you know, musicians and actors and stuff. And it's like, I think that what you're saying to me speaks to this idea that you're never going to be able to replace that live human experience.
Mm-mm.
And there's always going to be a place for that. So that's kind of nice to think about.
Yeah. So anyway,
we'll get on
the back
of the pickup truck and drive around. That's great. You're dancing in your apartment till midnight.
Yeah. Or two, or three, you know, whatever. Midnight.
Just like, oh, you stayed up past 10? Wow, good for you.
How are you? How are you? What's going on with
I'm
you?
I'm fine. I've had like, my week was like so weird. I was like, just really busy. But then in the middle of this chaos where I had no idea what day it was, any of the days, I don't know what is going on anymore. Totally upside down.
Right.
Totally
sorry, guys, down. If our podcast was late on Tuesday. We actually did have some technical issues with Apple. That's why Katie, we hadn't even talked about this, but there were some issues with Apple Podcast. So on iTunes. Fuck. Yeah. So if it was late, I'm so sorry. It was not our fault. It was Apple.
They can go help us out, actually. Like with their Apple's.
Well, there's no phone number. So you just have to talk
right,
to a
no,
robot.
I mean, that's so, like, yeah, that's like
so fun. That was a fun day. Anyway, continue.
Oh, no, just that I finally, you guys, I know you've been just with bated breath wondering when will she leave New York City? And the answer is I did on Tuesday.
Oh, my God.
And I went first time one hour year. North. It was oh like God, not Katie. Even that far, but it was great. It was so cold and wet. I was so cold and wet, but I was so happy to be out.
It looked like you went to Antarctica.
It was like crazy. If anybody follows me on Instagram, I posted some pictures. I was like by a lake, a river, I don't know what it was, something not in the city, but there was just like piles of ice everywhere. It was so cold, but it was great. And then I went ice skating for the first time since I was like 12.
Wow.
And that was kind of fun. Also wet, but
did you take the train?
No, I have a friend that was, I hadn't like seen this friend in a really long time, and he was sort of like, oh, we should hang out. And I was sort of like, well, you know, after the pandemic. But then he was like, I've got a car. And I was like, okay, like I'm coming. I'll come do whatever you want. So, oh God.
Katie, you got to get out more, girl.
I that would be great. I would love that. That sounds like a plan. I would love to go somewhere warm. I've been like fantasizing about tropical. You know what I did as you were thinking about like, oh, live performance. I was like, I want to go to like a week, not a resort or like a resort, but like I was like, I really want to try to find this like workout, like a health ooh, week somewhere, yes. But like on the beach. But I couldn't find one that suited me because either they were all like super like, oh, get wrapped in seaweed every day for a week, which I was like, no thanks. Mm-hmm. Or they were like yoga, and I was like, nope. Or they were like boot camp in a, you know, dungeon and like working out 12 hours a day, and I was like, no thank you. And then finally I did find one that was a hula hooping camp, and I was like, maybe I should do that one. It was like in Costa Rica. Can you imagine going to hula hooping camps? I don't even know, I'm not a good, I can barely hula hoop, and these people were like very good, but I would just go and be like, teach me. Give me a monkey and I'll start hula hooping.
God, that sounds amazing.
Anyway, that's how I've been spending my free time, which I did not have a lot of today. Mm-hmm. This week.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's I have to give a rash report.
Oh, it's, yeah. How's the what was the rash caused by? Do we know?
I don't know. I got a little bit of it, right? See?
Good Lord. Did you go to a doctor?
No, of course not.
Got to stop eating that uni. What? Do you have any idea what it could be or not at all?
I thought it was that fancy soap, like I said. So I switched to the Lever 2000. Still kind of happening. Don't know. I don't know. I don't know. If anybody's a doctor out there or a dermatologist. Cat. Yeah, I know. It probably is my animal. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it comes and goes. It's not really.
Not as bad.
I have like a new patient physical coming up. So I was going to talk about that and some other things. But here's the thing. I don't know if I mentioned it last week or whatever. But when I lived in Nashville, when I grew up in Nashville, I had to go get allergy shots twice a week. Like, I was so allergic to this town growing
up. Oh, maybe.
So
that's,
I just don't know.
We'll see
if
what
it's,
happens in the spring, too.
Yeah.
You may have to leave. May have to move back to New York.
I know.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So anyway, I know that's a hot. I know everyone was just like, oh my God, what is happening with her rash?
How is her rash?
Wait, we did have a listener call me last night, though, and was like, Marie, I'm very worried about your car. Like, do you understand you have to change the oil? Because I guess I talked about that last week. So I will change the oil. Thank you for your concern, John.
That's like one reason why very sweet. I don't have a car.
Yeah.
Because I would not know.
How to do it.
I'll figure it out, though. I could figure it out. I would be a car master. Give me a car. I'll become the next Danica Fitzpatrick.
Is that who's that?
She's that race car driver. That female. She's like amazing. Anyway.
Ooh,
I was like, I did kind of like race car driving, like NASCAR stuff, just watching on weekends when I was a kid. And I would like fantasize, like, I'm going to be a NASCAR driver, which if you know me and have seen me drive, you're like, are you serious? Like, is that
you merging onto the interstate is not.
It's kind of like being in NASCAR. It's as terrifying. It's
I think it's more as slow as like that Oregon Trail or something. Yeah, like
but
a
it's
wagon.
Also like as scary, but opposite.
It's terrifying. Yes. You're
but
a good
anyway,
driver.
She, yeah. But I always like the idea that like being like a female driver and then getting sponsored by Barbie and then having your whole car be like super pink and then you just destroy all these
oh
like.
My God, that's so
NASCAR
badass.
Weasels. Yeah.
That's
but
a
then
cool
I was like,
vision.
I don't like driving. It's fine. So I didn't do that. That's not how I lived my life. Could have, should have, would have. Didn't. Oh, God.
Oh, that'd be anyway. Cool if Barbie wanted to sponsor our tour. When
We got like a Barbie dream van.
Yes.
Oh,
girl.
Please. This is what I want.
I know.
I just want that.
Barbie, if you're listening.
I don't know that they would want to respond. Represent them. I want us to represent them.
We That's can cool. dream. Yeah.
Anyway, well, speaking of sponsors, maybe we can't get Barbie to do our van. We'll have like a big dildo wagon and drive around thanks to this wonderful company.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even better.
Select almost any one item for 50% off, and then Adam and Eve loads on the free stuff.
Enter offer code HORIO at checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts.
A sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy.
And 6 free spicy movies.
Ooh. Plus, free shipping.
That's HORIO, WHOREO, HORIO at adamandeve.com.
And we're back.
And we're back.
This is a history podcast today.
We are doing a history podcast today.
I love it. I yeah. actually have some really cool historic news just to shout out the podcast that I produce, Oldest Profession Podcast. We actually just found out Brown University is now going to be archiving everything we do, everything I produce, all the audio within their university. So in 100 years, 200 years, people could listen to the podcast I produced and edited.
I don't
Pretty
mean
cool.
this. I don't mean this in any bad way, but why? I mean that like that's wonderful. Why Brown or what's
well,
the connection there?
Well, I think it's Dr. Charlene Fletcher. She has a connection with Brown University and because of her and all the work that she's done, all the research she's been doing, and all the sex work,
historical
facts and advocacy. Yeah, so it's
very
really
cool.
exciting.
Congratulations.
We'll be able, thanks. I mean, I didn't do anything except
Well, no, what do you mean didn't do anything? You're the only reason why the I didn't do anything except do all of it.
Do all of it. But it's just kind of cool to think that, you know, that your stuff that you do will exist in history. So
absolutely. Well, we'll send an email to Brown and be like, do you want to do difficult
women? I'm on it. I'm on it.
I'll be like, no, thanks. We don't want it. Like, okay.
I am on it. So let's get into the history today because this blew my mind because I learned something different in school.
Yes, exactly. So today we're talking about Sacagawea, who went with Lewis and Clark on the expedition after the United States bought, which is so insane, bought the rest of America from France. Why did France own it? Like this is, that already is like, story over. What the fuck is that about? But anyway, Louisiana Purchase. How is that? And we just, I mean, when we learn that stuff in school, we're just like, yeah, of course. And then we bought America. But it's like, what? What? Think about that for a second. That's insanity. White people
wonder,
are insane.
How much was it? I didn't even look that up.
It was like $11. I don't know. It was not a lot. I think I remember from school that they were like, they sold it for a song. France was like, we don't want it. It's fine. You can have it.
Well, that's right. I mean, and so, I mean, let's get into what we learned in school. This is what I learned. It was like, yes, Thomas Jefferson wanted to, you know, he purchased it from France, expanded America, and then wanted to explore the Eastern Ocean to the Western Sea. And so he started an expedition to find the fastest route to get to the Pacific Ocean. And...
They found it, I guess.
Still looking for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how to get there.
Highway 1 is always blocked by a giant rock now, so you can't go anywhere in California.
There's
so.
Fires.
There's
and,
fires. Yeah. You can't. There's no way to the ocean
yeah,
anymore.
No,
anyway,
didn't get there. But yeah, the romantic idea of it was that, yeah, Lewis and Clark, they were, I guess they were soldiers. And Clark was a naturalist. Did you know this? That Captain Lewis, he was also known as Chief Long Knife, which, what are they talking about? His knife?
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Okay. And then Captain Clark was Chief Red Hair.
All right. So you get what you take. Get what you, take what you get.
But the romantic idea was that one of the soldiers' wives was Sacagawea, and she acted as a tour guide on this expedition. And because of her, the West was discovered or whatever. They got there because of her, right? That's what we learned.
Yeah, that's generally the idea. The you know, Lewis and Clark then are celebrated as heroes for discovering not discovering America, but you know, finding a way to the West Coast. And she you know, people in the Americans have given Sacagawea some credit, but little did they know right away how much she really played a part in this whole story. So yes, let's start at the very beginning from what we do know about her. And I guess the very beginning to some extent is that we, like many things in history and people's names that are not anglicized, we very well could be pronouncing her name wrong. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of like, there's not a lot of clarity as to what the proper pronunciation is. There are some historians that say, so we tend to say like Sacagawea. Mm-hmm. Some historians say that it's Sacagawea.
Sacagawea.
Yeah, and that the J sound is actually a hard G, and that the you put the emphasis on the second syllable, not the first. So Sacagawea. So there's a lot of like historians that feel like that's the right pronunciation. But to make matters more confusing, members of her original tribe say, no, no, it is pronounced Sacagawea. And then other tribes say, no, it's pronounced totally differently. The spelling, there's different ways that the spelling is presented. The main thing about her and her story is that what we know about her primarily is from the Lewis and Clark diaries. Mm-hmm. So they were spelling her name phonetically.
Mm.
So there's like a lot of confusion then about like how were they pronouncing her name, how was she pronouncing her name, how, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's worth mentioning. I think today we can say Sacagawea just because that's how people know her the best, but I think it's worth noting that, you know, it's disrespectful to just decide right. We're gonna be like, oh, I don't really know, we'll just, you know, this is what we feel like calling her. But it is not clear, so I just wanted to put that out there as a starter.
That's a very good point. So what I discovered, she was born in 1788 in Idaho.
Well, now it's Idaho. So she was born into the Gaetica tribe of the Lemhi Shoshone in what's now known as Idaho.
Thank you for that. That's
yes.
good.
And then
historical
she was,
facts.
Yes. And then she was kidnapped when she was about 12 mm-hmm. by a group of Hidatsu, from people from the Hidatsu tribe. And then taken to where my family's from, the Dakotas. And then, so this is like for me, the first part of the story that just gets glossed over in our history books. She wasn't just like, oh, I fell in love with this like French, what's his face?
Fur trader.
Yeah, fur trader, Mr. French name. What's his name?
Oh, Toussaint Chavanier.
Yes, I care less about pronouncing his name right, but she's not like, yeah, it's not like he came by and then they fell in love. She was sold to him. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing they didn't teach us that. They were like her husband, whatever. And like, maybe they were sort of married, but you know,
yeah, she
was
sold.
The Wild West kind of thing. Did you know, did you find in your research that he also had three wives?
Oh, Toussaint.
Yeah, real winner.
There. Nope. I did not know that. Where yeah. were they? Not with him.
Around. They just, you oh. know, whatever.
Jesus.
Who knows?
Okay. All so, right.
And I think that is one of the things that at that time, I mean, think about like most of the people living in the United States were living on the East Coast, or like the, you know, all over there, and people are starting to push out west. So that's one thing I know, like if you go to like South Dakota and go to these like cowboy museums and stuff, a lot of people moved west to just like defy, like they just wanted to live a rock star life, basically. They didn't want to like live traditional norms. So yeah, if you go out there and you got money and then you buy three wives, you can do that in the West. You can't really get away with that in like very Christian, you know, setups on like the East Coast.
Couldn't get away with it nowadays because there's Facebook, and you would just, you know, you'd find out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
you'd be out.
I mean, some
back
people
then.
Get away with it for a while, but that's, I don't know. They're real good. They got kind of burner still, phones and stuff.
Still yeah. happening. Yes, yeah, it's still happening today.
Yeah, but the other, you know. So anyway, that's
whoa,
just one
I did
side fact.
Not know that.
Yeah.
Well, Sacagawea was pregnant within a year. And she gave birth to a son, and they named the baby Jean-Baptiste Chavonneau, but Captain Clark called him Pompey.
Totally. And guess how old she was when she had this baby?
How old?
16.
Mm.
So here's the other thing that's nuts about this story, is that so she was pregnant when Lewis and Clark came into town, whatever this fort was that they were all at. They were hired by the government to come in and do this expedition. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for help to like, who can help us get through this path, mm-hmm. to find the path or whatever, the best path. And this fur trader dude was like, the French guy was like, I want to do it. I want to be the guy that helps you. And they were like, how helpful are you? What can you, are you really that useful right. to us? And he was like, yeah. Look at this. I got one of my wives. She's knows the people around here. She speaks all these languages. We could use her. Mm-hmm. And Lewis and Clark were like, actually, that's a really great idea, because not only does she speak way more languages than any of us and can be a translator on as we're going through these different parts of this quote unquote unexplored country, mm-hmm. but she also there was a quote in one of their journals about it. They said a woman with a party of men is a token of peace. So the idea was, they won't be attacked by the Native Americans because that was not part of that culture, tribal culture. Like if a woman was with you in a war party, it meant we're not fighting.
Oh, right.
So that was already like big wins all across the board.
And keep in mind, Sacagawea did not speak English. She did speak all these other languages, but she did not speak English, and she could not read, obviously, either. So that's a fun little fact. That must have been a tricky conversation.
I don't know. I don't even know. I can't even imagine. But she spoke all these other languages and was able to right. navigate. Anyway, the other thing is, so when they met her, she was still pregnant. Then mm-hmm. she had the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then like not that long later, they were like, okay, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she brought her like tiny, tiny baby with her on this crazy expedition.
Yep, Pompey. They strapped him to a board to mm-hmm. her back mm-hmm. and said, let's go into the wilderness.
Right. And it wasn't like this whole expedition is, if you did learn anything in school about it, you do know that it wasn't like smooth sailing all the way, you know, that they definitely had to fight the elements. There was a point in which everybody got sick and they weren't sure if they were going to make it. Thanks to her, in her ability to like know what berries were edible, what plants were edible, what roots she, you know, you could eat and survive on, they survived, but literally because of her. Like right. that was it.
It was so cold at one camp, they were basically starving to death and they were eating candles to stay alive.
Yes.
But thanks to her, she was like, quit chewing on that candle and chew on this root. Thanks, right. Sacagawea. You know?
Right.
I mean, that's why it's like, yeah, because of her, they survived.
There's also, there was some point when they were all in some boat and the boat capsized and she was the only one that had the presence of mind to dive down and then recover all of their information. So all the like important tools for navigation or extra supplies, and then heard the journals, which are actually the reason why we know any of this, how, you know, the story of how this happened. They were very good at taking notes. Lewis and Clark were.
And they said that she did that with the baby strapped to her back.
Did she?
That's, I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. That's the other thing that's so weird about all this is that like all we really know is what Lewis and Clark recorded.
Right.
But they at least gave her credit for this. And was it William Lewis, right? Or William Clark? Which one's the William?
I believe William Clark, because it's Meriwether Lewis.
Right. What a name. What a name, Meriwether. Can you imagine naming your son Meriwether? I mean, that's no problem. Yeah. Anyway, Meriwether Lewis. I wonder what his middle name was. Eugene. But William Clark was the out of everybody, he was the one that saw her and was like, she's saving us. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. And really took to the baby, and you know, that's why he had the pet name for Pompey. And really was the one that kind of wanted to give her more credit than, and these other guys were like, whatever, we can do it ourselves. But she was like the one that, you know, he gave her credit. Another crazy part of that story is that as they were going through one part of the terrain, they were stopped by a tribe, and it turned out to be members of the Lemhi Shoshone tribe. And one of the people that stopped them was her brother, who she hadn't seen since she was kidnapped. So they had this like really amazing reunion, and I guess that was documented. But you know, they're like, "Oh, great, that's so cool, whatever. Come on, we're gonna go."
God, so, could you imagine this poor seeing woman, your brother after 5 years, being like, "Oh, hey, yeah, I have a baby now, and they're making me go,
and I'm a slave woman, like a slave wife, and I'm being." And that's the other thing is like, I don't think that this was a situation necessarily where they were like, "Hey, Sacagawea, do you feel like helping us out?" It was more like, "Yeah, my wife or this woman that I bought is gonna do this stuff." And she's 16. I mean, like, you know, when you're 16, you don't, it's easy to, you know, force somebody to do something. Anyway, that's a whole other thing.
There was another story where on their expedition, they came up against a Native American tribe, and like the chief came out and they had like a peaceful, you know, because of her, he was like, "Oh, okay, I won't kill you all," or vice versa. But the chief had this beautiful fur coat that they wanted. And so as history has romanticized it, it was like Sacagawea then removed her only possession that she loved, her beaded belt, and gave it to them to trade for this fur coat because they wanted to bring the fur coat back to Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
Something tells me that maybe she didn't just go, "Oh, you know what? This one thing that I still have from, you know,
the only thing that I care about. Because here. You want to give that coat to some other dude that's not even here. He's not even doing the work." But okay. Oh, yeah, that was a sad part of the story. Yeah, but then they made it.
Right.
You know, and they made it. They found a good path. They felt confident in their work. They came back heroes. Mm-hmm. The other person that was on this expedition that doesn't get nearly enough credit or doesn't get a lot of mention is York. Now people are talking about this more. But York was a slave to, I think it was William Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he put in the work too. He was there. He had to go through this whole expedition. He, you know, everybody to some extent was part of the reason why they made it, right? Mostly Sacagawea, but yeah. And then they came back and, you know, rewards were given all around. Everybody got like all this money, and then they got like plots of land and stuff, but not Sacagawea. Mm-hmm. And I think York got I don't even think he got anything. I'm not even sure about that. But he did. He'd done everything that they'd asked him to do. He had a wife somewhere not in the north, you know, like not up there. And he said, "You know, I've done what you wanted me to do. Can I please have my freedom?" And Clark was like, "What the fuck? No. How dare you? How dare you ask for your freedom?" So he didn't let him go. And then he said, "Well, could I please just go down and like stay with my wife, or can we, you know, go back? And I haven't seen her in 5 years." And he was like, "No, absolutely not." He finally let him go on one like final trip to go see her, and wrote all these letters being like, "If he turns on me or he tries to run, like we'll get him," or whatever, just awful things. But he came back, York did, and he never saw his wife again. And Clark like complained then in all of his diaries and letters that like, "Oh, York is being like he's so like curmudgeon-y now, and he's not much use to me anymore because he's just so sad all the time. Why is he so sad? And you're just like, oh my God. And the reason why I think that's important to bring up is just that, like, a lot of times in these history stories, they like to really push the idea that Clark was really loving towards Sacagawea because he really like saw the goodness in her and he saw how great she was. And yet he wasn't so great that he couldn't see that all people are people. You know what I mean? That everybody, you know, so they don't, they like to forget that part. Mm-hmm. But they have since given, posthumously, York some like levels of, what was it that they gave him? I think the Obama administration was like, okay, we're going to award him with, like, you know, it was like basically like the Medal of Freedom type kind of thing, which is nice. But also you're like, so what? Like, you know, this guy suffered so much, and not that it doesn't matter. It's good to recognize everybody's work and all these things. But those are the parts of the story they don't tell you.
Right. Well, I just want to state the facts again, because I think that a lot of the things even we just said now may not even be true, because what I learned is, like, the only facts within Clark's journal that we know about Sacagawea is that she helped save those medical supplies when the boat capsized, that she was valuable in finding food, like roots and berries and stuff to keep them alive during the winter, and that she was a human peace symbol. So those are the only things that are true facts within the diaries. So everything else that we have said on this podcast, romanticized or whatever, believe it or not, it came out during the suffrage movement. I was learning about this that, you know, during the turn of the century, when women were really fighting for their rights, white women were fighting for their rights, they were then looking back in the history books, and Sacagawea really stood out. And so they romanticized her story of that because of her, this expedition was successful. So Arthur, I learned that Arthur Eva Emery Dye, she was, you know, a big leader in the, or not a leader, but wrote about the suffrage movement. When she spoke of Sacagawea, wrote about her, phrasing her as the Indian princess.
Mm-hmm.
And she led these men with a baby on her back. And they, and she really took that story, and I think her intentions were well, right? To share with women that a woman could do a man's job, basically. A woman could lead men on a man's journey. That's what she would say in her stories. So, I mean, yeah, cool. That's very cool. But that's kind of where it starts, I think, in the history books, of changing the narrative of her story. I know in school I learned that she was the main guide on this expedition. That's not true. She was taken. She was dragged
along.
She
wasn't a guide in the sense that, yeah, she was like, hey, I'll help you out and you'll pay me for it. Right.
Right. And then in the 1940s, again, the feminist movement, you know, during World War II, when the men were off fighting and the women had to go to work and do the men's jobs and stuff, her story came up again, basically, you know, like to empower women to do men's work and also to prove to men that women could do the same jobs too. So it's just interesting. I mean, this story happened in the 1800s. And all we know are these small little facts.
The other thing that's to compound that is that there were a lot of stories then, because it was pretty, at the time even, incredible that they were able to complete this journey. So it wasn't like no big deal. It was a big deal then too for everybody around the, you know. And she was also very celebrated within the Native communities too.
Oh, yes.
So a lot of these, there's a lot of other stories too that are, you know, passed down by word of mouth. And it's not fully clear, like, how, what is true and what is not of those stories too. There's all these other side. There was like a side story that, like, at one point during the expedition, she was like, I didn't come out here for nothing. Like, I want to go see the great planes or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And that they said, no, we can't. We got to continue. And she said, no, I'm going to go and see the thing. So then she kind of went against their wishes and then was able to see the thing she'd always wanted to see. That could have happened. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to know for sure, like, what, how much of that is true. How did it really happen, if it did happen?
Yeah. She wanted to go whale watching. Too. She wanted to see the big fish in the sea that she's, I mean, obviously, I'm sure you hear these stories from passed down from generation. I mean, her family lived in America for thousands of years before white men. So, of course, you hear these stories and myths and legends of things that across the land that your full, you know, heritage is from. It makes me so I get so worked up about it.
But it is hard to know then, like you're saying, that the, and then even like things like, well, what's the big deal of like saying that she was a princess? It's like, it's sort of like the Pocahontas thing too. It's like you just undermine the fact that like some of these things may not have been choices on her part, you know? There is another thing that was seemed factual, but maybe is still in question. But apparently there was some decision that they had to make at one point and they held a vote. And it was like documented as the first time a woman was allowed to vote.
Oh.
So during the expedition, they had to have a vote for like, do we turn left or do we turn right? And they they allowed her to vote because they needed her input. And that was the first documented vote that where a woman was able to vote. And Native Americans weren't allowed to vote until the 50s.
Right. Which
so it was kind of a big deal.
Was not
that,
long
like,
ago,
they,
guys.
No, not at all.
Not long
but
ago.
So people, and again, I don't know if this is one of those stories that's not really true or how that really pans out, but people do attribute that moment to being the first time that a woman's vote was taken into account.
Right. So we do know that Clark kind of kept in touch with Sacagawea for up to 6 years after the expedition. So much so that he cared for her that he offered to adopt, I guess, her two children.
Well, so right? What happened?
There's
she has like two or three grave markers. So it's we're not 100% clear when she died or how she died, but he did take a lot of like notes still about her because they did stay in contact. And it seems like the most likely thing that happened was that at about 24, I think it was, that she passed away then, which is very young. Even for time, I think it was very young. And I think it had something to do, they're not 100% sure, some sort of fever or something. And I think it had something to potentially do with her second child being born. And if not directly related to second child, she did die very soon after her second child was born. So then there was two babies that were like left after she passed away. And then he was like, okay, I'm going to adopt these kids. Which makes me wonder, I don't know, like was French Face dead or did he just go like, I don't care about these kids? I think maybe he was dead because I think that they said that like legally you couldn't adopt a child unless both parents were gone. So I think that, but that was not part of the stories I was reading, so I kept being like, did this guy just walk out on his children? I'm not a fan of that guy. So yeah, that was definitely the other thing that's interesting is that there's some sort of grave site for her that kind of marks that as the end of her life at about 24 years old. But then in South Dakota, there's another gravestone site that claims that she died much later, like in her 70s. Or there's even one place.
100.
There was one place that said that she was like in her to live to be about 100. And there were some people. There was a man that buried this old Native American woman, and he was, I think, a white dude. He was a doctor or something, and then he took care of this woman. And the people of the tribe were telling him, this is Sacagawea, this is Sacagawea. So he buried her and then sort of told everybody, oh, I buried Sacagawea. People were like, she's been dead for years, but he was like, I don't know. And people said, well, how do you know it was her? And he's like, I only know because that's what they told me, but I don't have any real sense. So there, I think that that's sort of an interesting thing too, just that like, again, amongst the Native people of the United States, she was very held to very high esteem for the amount that she was able to help out and accomplish and all that. One thing that kind of haunts me though, and I'm sure it haunts lots of people, is that there's also this just awful weird feeling of like this woman was to some degree probably forced to participate in this. And maybe more, I don't know how willingly, maybe she was like, okay, let's do it. I don't really know. I can't tell you that. But that it also was like really aided in accelerating the demise of her people. Mm. And I think that that's just such a, and that's such an American thing, like a white American thing, mm-hmm. to like be like, oh, this woman, she's amazing. Like, we've put her on a coin.
Right.
We've been excited about her. The suffragettes were excited about her because she made America great. Mm-hmm. But for who? Mm-hmm. You know, right. For the betterment of like white supremacy, basically at the end of the day. And that to me is like one of the most, it's like this weird, haunting, tragic story then, you know, like the, that Lewis and Clark expedition is like haunting in this strange, not strange way, but in, I don't know. I don't quite know. I'm sure there have been many historians that have thought about this and have tackled it, and I'd be interested to read more about it. But it's something that I just sits with me in a weird way that's like, yeah. Wow.
Well, I think that that's certainly what we've been learning these last several months of just talking and diving into history, especially like the Daughters of the Confederacy, and then having Dr. Charlene Fletcher on. If you haven't listened to that episode, please do. But is just how much our history, what we've been taught in schools, is to just support white supremacy.
That one narrative. You know, the other thing about the end of the story is that, did you see that Meriwether Lewis committed suicide?
I think I did know that, but
that's how he ended his life. So even those heroes in that story, what basically happened, more, I didn't fully understand the details of this because it's like money and land and that kind of stuff is, I don't understand how they handle that stuff at the time, but they were given a certain amount of money and then a plot of land or whatever for finishing the expedition. And they were given like posts, you know, so like governor of St. Louis or whatever, all these like those kinds of posts. And something, you know, again, I'm sure it's documented somewhere, I just didn't go deep into it enough, but something happened where Lewis took whatever money they gave him and then put it into like, invested it in land, whatever, and then started like losing the money or like ran out of money and then was like really struggling. And he turned to, by that time, Thomas Jefferson was out in the next president. I was like Teddy Roosevelt, but I think that's like definitely not right. But
whoever was just after, skip a couple.
Thomas, yeah, so whoever it was, Madison, I don't know who it was. But that guy, that, you know, and this is the thing about our presidents. It's like one president might be like, you're great. And the next one, it's like, I don't care about you. You did what we needed you to do. So we're not, you know, I'm not giving you anything else. Mm-hmm. So he just kind of like lost his mind and then killed himself.
Wow.
And that's like, you know, that's a hero.
That's very America like, too. It's like, yeah, just chew you up and spit you back.
Discard you. Yeah.
Yeah. We sit and, you know, people that serve our country and then fight for our rights and freedom. And then they come back and then.
Yeah. So even within that like white supremacy narrative where you could say, oh, Lewis and Clark are the heroes. Even they're, you know, even they're not taken care of.
This episode just blew my fucking mind, you guys.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. I mean, I think, again, like, know your history and find the truth, really. I mean, even just researching Sacagawea just for this, I found 10 different stories.
Right. And the other thing is, like, honestly, like, look, if you couldn't tell already... It's not like we don't spend like weeks and weeks researching this stuff.
We're not,
you know?
Historians.
We're not historians. We're not
diving
experts.
Into our
We usually like mangle these stories like crazy. But it doesn't take very long. I think that if you can take anything away from it, is it really doesn't take very long to start at least opening up, you know, peeking it behind the curtain on some of these things. This information is out there. And but also take everything with a grain of salt. So like you were saying, I love that part about with the suffragettes, right? Like,
right.
So then where are those stories coming from? What is the, and then how does that affect these narratives and stuff? And is it, again, what's frustrating about the suffragette movement is that was very much a white movement at the time. Mm-hmm. And that they would use that story to better themselves, but then not apply it to every single woman in America. Mm-hmm. They were not, those early suffragettes were not known for wanting equality for all the races. They just wanted, you know, the right women's rights. But interesting that they would use Sacagawea, right, for their own gain. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these are just the things I think we just have to start rethinking. And like I said, you don't have to be perfect. just start. And then again, as always, if anything, if we said anything that is like wrong or like whatever or inflammatory in any sense, let us know and let's talk about it.
Yes. Send us an email to difficultwomenpodcast@gmail.com. Please. We'd love to hear from you all.
And maybe you'll discover more. I mean, we just are at the, you know, we just kind of scratched the surface on some of these stories. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot went down during that expedition. I can't even imagine. I bet you could find the actual journal.
Yeah, I think.
I'd be curious to read it.
Yeah. I mean, one thing, I don't even know if it's worth bringing up, but some medical historians, it does say there is like... Clark had written down that Sacagawea was sick for a week with a fever and a weak pulse and respiratory issues. And medical historians actually have now said that that could have been gonorrhea.
Yes, I heard that. I mean, and then also, again, fuck that French guy. What's going on there?
Fuck that French guy. If he had three wives. But also, I mean, I hate to say this, but it's true. Let's just say it. But like at 12 years old, being kidnapped, taken to a fort...
Who knows what was going on?
Yeah, we know. Well, yeah, who knows? But anyway, I think that the main thing is that like her story, let's stop romanticizing these stories and histories and really find the truth of them. Because, right. I mean, it's
and
also.
And let's please stop calling these people their husbands.
Right.
And let's stop calling this love.
Right.
When, you know, a 16-year-old slave, she was bought.
Right.
Is then, you know, impregnated or married, whatever. Like that's, we have to stop saying that.
Right.
That should be the first thing we go through the history books and go, anytime you see marriage, be like, what do you mean? Are you sure?
Right.
Like, can we double check that?
It really makes me think like, because my nephews are 2 years old and it makes me think like, you know, if I have children, if I can, or if whatever, you know, who knows? But when your child asks you questions about history, it is your, I mean, hear me preaching right now. I don't have a child. I'm not a parent. I don't know. But I've been thinking so much about this as we talk about Black Lives Matter and anti-racism and what it means to be anti-racist. It truly is your job to teach them the right history. And to, you know, I if my nephews ask me about Sacagawea, then I want to have a real conversation with them and say, no, she was kidnapped. She was a slave. There was no love. There was no romance. There's so many stories of even Clark and her having a romance. That's not true.
Right.
We have to start telling our children the truth because they are the next generation that's going to be, I mean, oral history is such a huge deal.
And also what you teach in school. So I've been seeing all these articles too about people like, and I don't want to even label the people. I'm not going to say conservative or liberal because I don't know, but there's been people that are starting to pull their kids out of school because they don't like the, you know, that people are starting to teach the true history. Mm. And they're like, well, that's, I don't like that history. I don't want my kids to learn
that.
I'm
sure they're just like, you know what?
All of this shit is uncomfortable.
Right. It's time
if you're
to get
not uncomfortable, you're not,
you're doing it wrong.
You're not hearing the real thing. Right. I think that's like what I'm learning more and more and more, especially with the history of the United States, is if something sounds like, oh, that's so nice of, you know, Thomas Jefferson or whatever, chances are you're not hearing the whole picture. Mm-hmm. Think, just to go back to the beginning of the episode, think again about like, why does it seem so easy to us to hear the phrase like, and then they bought the rest of the country from France? What is that? Like, just think about how insane that is.
Right.
You know, like that. And that's how we start. That is how we our story starts. So nothing good is going to come from that story at the end. You know, it doesn't mean there aren't moments of things and there aren't moments to celebrate and innovations and individuals who did good things. But so I'm not trying to shit on every single thing. But I don't know, guys. I think
the truth matters.
I think it's time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to know our history. Oh, I love it. I love history. I love that we just did this episode. Good job.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how good a job we did, but I think that you know, we're trying. We're trying to we get are. Out some new information here.
Yeah. Guys, if you have ideas for future episodes, things that you want us to research or just talk about, you know, email us, difficultwomenpodcast@gmail.com. We're looking for future episodes, future guests. Like, just keep us in the know because we're not stopping. This train is choo-chooing along. So also follow us on Patreon. March 15th, we're doing a St. Patrick's Day show for our patrons. So head on over to patreon.com/reformedwhores so you can tune in.
Hooray. Doing the hand. I'm doing the hand now.
Oh, you can't yay. See it. Cheerio. Yeah.
Shake that hand by your ear.
I love it. I'll take a picture of that and send that.
Great.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. Talk to you soon. Goodbye.
Goodbye.